The names of the interviewers are Sophia Collins and Amelia Spooner. The name of the interviewee is Rini Summer. The interview is taking place at Frank Weimark House. The date is the 27th of September 2010. The interview is for the grandchildren of the Blitz Project. Rini, can I ask you your place and date of birth?
My
place and date
my
of
place?
Birth,
please. What do you mean, where I live?
No, where you were born.
Oh, where I was born. I was born in Bermondsey, in an old little old town, run down house in off a little turning called Arnold's Place at Dockhead. And I'm 83 now.
Okay, and what was the date of your birth?
The 3rd of June, 1927.
Thank you.
How old were you when during the Blitz?
Well, actually, I was 12 when war was declared, and I was evacuated 2 days before war was declared, and I was 12 years of age then. And I was taken to Brighton with all the, on a train with all the evacuees, and we was billeted out on different people.
So did you Brighton?
I did, because I'd never been to the seaside before. First time I'd been to the seaside. So for me it was quite a treat.
Did you like the people who you were staying with?
Yes, I did. It was an elderly couple then, and I was with my cousin, and we had the front room for us. We were one of the lucky couples, you know. It was they were very nice. But my cousin's mum came down after 5 weeks we'd been there, and nothing had happened in London then. And then she came and see us on the Sunday, and then she went back to my mum and said, I think we ought to get them home, because we got lousy in our hair. We didn't know at 12 years of age what it was, and she'd noticed us keep scratching our head. So my mum said, we'll go and bring them back. And we was only there for 5 weeks, but I must say, the 5 weeks I was there, it was an adventure for us. I remember on the Sunday when war was declared, we was in a lovely big park in Brighton, and all the sirens went, and we went down in a shelter, and that, and all the elderly people that was all saying, war's declared and everything, and but nothing became of it. It wasn't a raid then on Brighton, and as I say, it was quite an adventure for me, because I'd never seen the sea or anything like that before.
Could you tell me about your home?
My home,
where you lived?
Well, we'd moved out of the little house, as I said, then, where I was born, and I went into a flat in Towerbridge Road in Bermondsey, and there was quite a few of us, because actually my mama had 14 children, and I was the 14th, so I was the baby, but they weren't all alive when I came along. But and just before war was declared, one of my brothers had lost his wife and baby, so they died, and so he came back home, so we was getting a full house again, you know, and they all thought and they was all older than me. My brother was still at school, I believe. He was a little bit older than me, but the others all thought that I should be evacuated.
Was you happy when all your brothers and sisters came back?
Because the family seemed to be getting smaller to me, you know, we all had to sit around it. When I was in the flat, I can always remember when I was very small in the old house, we used to have to sit on the stairs because there wasn't enough room around the table at the time. And it seemed that when one of the girls or one of the brothers got married, when you was 14 you went to work then. And one of us on the stairs would become 14, and they all worked their way onto the table. You know, it was sort of like a roundabout, really. But no, life was lovely to me, because as I say, I was the baby, so I suppose in a way I was really spoiled. But times were hard. My dad was a docker, and they worked down the river, and they only got paid for what they did then. They didn't have to do like, as the dockers built it, the job up, but it was quite hard going. I used to, and when my dad didn't get called on to do a job on a ship, I used to come home and he'd have all a cup of tea made for me, and I used to think, oh, I hope my dad ain't at work today. But when I think about today, my mum must have been praying he would get a job because of all the children, you know. But no, my life was easier then, like for me.
Can you tell me like a bit of your memories about evacuation? Like, what kind of stuff did you get up to during the day?
Well, we were evacuated, I say, to Brighton, and we were put out into a big school to share the school with the Brighton children, and that was quite nice, you know. It was always something different for us. It was an adventure, and it was really enjoyable. But then, as I say, I came home, and then I was home, I think, for about a year, and then in 1940. They said that the Blitz was going to, they had an idea it was going to start. You know, there was the practising with the gas mask and all that, that my mum had me evacuated again, and I went to Cornwall. And I went into a little village. I was still lucky again because they were putting all the children out, and they were trying to keep sisters and brothers together if they could. A lot of the boys went on a farm, and I was in this little village. It was really lovely. I loved it. It was so different again for me. It was a country, and I was very fortunate because then you only had the one little shop in a village like that, you know, and I was evacuated with this young couple. When I think now, I suppose they hadn't been married very long, and they had me put onto them, and I had a lovely little bedroom, which one time I was in with five sisters in a bed, but then when that came along, I had my own bedroom. It was really lovely, you know. And I was there till I think I must have been 13 then, and I was 14, and I started going to go potato picking on the farm for the boy, and I was allowed to stay on it because I'd reached the age of 14. I've still got my certificate from the school when I left. And my eldest brother had to come down and get me because my dad was dying, and my mum had brought me home then. So I wasn't actually in the Blitz, but I came home and the doodlebugs and all that started then. And I had to start work because I was 14. And I started work during the war. My first job was in a little factory, sewing on buttons for little babies' dresses, and we made hot water bottle covers for the army. I didn't realise that soldiers got hot water bottle then, but we made a load of hot water bottles. And you felt as though you was doing a bit of war work. That was only 14. And then 15, I give it up, and I went to work along the wall, along Bermondsey Wall here, you know, the river, in a big old wharf. And we were doing all war work and different jobs in there. And it was called the Caledonian Wharf, but we used to call it the Cali. And if you was a Cali girl, you was one of the girls, you know. And I went all through the Blitz. And me and my mum used to, the boys had gone in the forces. And me and my mum used to go and sleep in an old, in a the bottom flat. We was on the top flat, like you can see along there, up there. And then this old chap, my mum always used to give him a Sunday dinner. So we used to go, he let us sleep on his floor, and that was our sort of shelter. Two of my sisters worked in a tin factory, and they used to go down there, but me and my mum was there. And about 6 o'clock one morning, all the doors came in on us, and the little houses that was along the side of it all got blown up, and they had to come and get us out of the ground floor flat, you know. I can remember my uncle running round calling out for my mum. He got us out all the doors, and probably the old chap who let us sleep there didn't ever have his chimney swept, and when we come out we didn't know. But my uncle and that was putting their handkerchiefs in their mouth, getting the soot out of my mouth and my mum's mouth and that, you know. And we had to go down to the shelter where my sisters was in the tin, what we used to call them, they used to make big tins and for the water, big drum ticks, tin shops we used to call them. And we had to go down there and they let us wash our face and it. But as we went along, people were queuing up for a bus to go to it. It was all staring at, we must have looked a real sight, you know. All, must have looked like the black and white minstrels, you know, all the soot all over us, but they cleared all our mouths out and that. But that was the with the doodle bugs. And then, because as we got older, I was getting 17, and towards the end of the war, and then it was the V2s, the rockets. You didn't know when they would come, because the doodle bugs used to come, and we stood on our top landing, me and my mum, and watched them come along and say, oh, look, oh, it's the engine stopped, it's going to dive down. When you knew it stopped, you'd get into some sort of shell, because it just come down flat, you know. But as a young girl, you didn't seem to take a lot more notice. I mean, we used to go out dancing and all that in the blackout, you know. We still carried on with life. But it was very hard work when we worked along the, what we call along the wharf, Bermondsey Wall, the river side, you know, bitter cold winters, and you never had no heating in the factories then, because it was all great big square floors, and, you know, you'd freeze, really. But we packed what was called the 24-hour invasion pack. It was in a waterproof square box, and that was for our soldiers who was going to invade France. You know, they went over to France after Dunkirk. They went again to France. And everything was worked out. It was marvellous, really. It was two sort of hard biscuits and a little tin of tea and so many sweets. And everything was all worked out. And you went along on a surveyor belt, and you all put what you had to put in that box. And that was called the... And it was sort of a... It what made in a waterproof cardboard box, and that was the invasion pack, that was called the 24-hour invasion pack. And also we did one, I don't know if you know the little sardine tins, and it's got a key on the back. Well, we had a big one that size and deep, and a big key on it, and that was called the jungle pack. We packed them for the soldiers. On the same sort of scheme, all packed out that it fitted perfectly. And I always remember we had a little pile of square toilet paper squares, and you had to count four and put it in and wrap something in and work it all in. So it was all, so it didn't move about and everything. It was quite interesting, you know, that was that. We did the jungle packs and everything for the war. Hmm.
As you said, when you went to Brighton first, when you went to Cornwall, which place did you like more?
Well, I like both of them, really, because Brighton was the seaside, and then when I went to Cornwall, we was right in the middle of a little village, all country. You know, you see all the animals on the farm, in the fields, but something else what was new to us, you know. You never really see all that, because I know some people would say, like, they went hop picking and they would go on a farm. I only ever went once with one of my older sisters, so I didn't like hop picking then. I went there when I was calling my husband, and because they used to go every year, but it all seemed a bit more to me a bit of a venture. I think when you're that age, you don't see the danger of things like you would today, you know. Funny enough, we would just went along Drum Road today. My sister was going to put an advert in the Southwark News, and it was we were saying, "Oh, how about when people went under the arches?" And I could never go in under arches or an underground, I think then people was more braver going in them places. As I say, me and my mum just used to shelter in the ground floor flat. And you'd hear them come over, you know. But I do still remember that when the little row of houses in Riley Street, it was called, got bombed. And because their backyards came into our square, like you had a square in front of your flats like here. And it, as I say, it blew everything in on us and that. And afterwards, when we come out, and we used to have a soldier parading up and down a square with the rifle on him, watching for, in case anyone come looting and that in the bombed out flats. And then workmen came and then blocked all our windows up and that. And the roof being on the top floor, we had to leave the bedrooms and sleep down in the living room till they were able to come and patch them all up and that. But life still went on, you know, you had to carry on.
Did you go to school during the Blitz?
No, when I came home, from Brighton and that, there was Riley Street School right outside our block of flats, and we used to get half a day in there. We used to go for half a day, you know, but because most of the teachers had taken the other children evacuation, so, but it was, I don't think, I always feel as though I lost a bit of the, you know, being taught well there, because you lost a lot, couple of years of your schooling. You don't, you like it when you're kids, but you know, I wish I'd have studied a bit more there, you know. But no, and we used to go to they opened Riley Street School, and we used to go to Play Centre of an evening when there was a lull in it, because it was the Blitz, and then it became the Doodlebugs, and then it became the Rockets, you know. Well, then I was at work then, so you just had to see it through. But I never ever felt I went short, really, because when I was evacuated, as I say, I lived in the village shop, and we didn't want for food, naturally, living in there. So I was one of the lucky ones when I went to Cornwall. And going to Brighton for the first 5 weeks of the war, it wasn't hard. I mean, I had my identification card done in the Brighton code, because they come round the house and you all had identification cards. We still had them after the war. I know my son was born in 1950 and I've still got his identity card. Yeah, when he was a baby. Still got them sort of things. But no, I did enjoy the evacuation, I must say that. It was a treat to go on a train. I'd never been on a train before. And one of the teachers was saying, I think we're going to Brighton, because apparently she came from there and she'd come up for work and then she was going home. She was, you know. But no, it was quite an adventure. To me, evacuation, I mean, I know I've heard about some children had terrible places, but it wasn't probably the old couple I was living with that let us get, we must have caught it off in some kids in school. It happens, doesn't it? But my aunt came down when she see our head was dirty, we come home.
And did you have any friends in Brighton or Cornwall?
Oh, yeah, we made friends with the local children, yeah. Yeah, we made friends with them. They were very kind. When you think sometimes some of the people had lovely homes. We was the only house in that village that had, one of the houses, as I can remember, only had electric. We used to have, the others used to have the old lamps, you know, then, where, I mean, when I left Tadbridge Road in the flats in 1939, that was one of the first flats that was built with electric, because we went from the little gas lights to electric. I remember, as I say, I was about 6 or 7 when I went in the first flat, and I went running around switching all the lights on, you know. And my mum saying, don't treat them on, I haven't got another penny to put in the meter. You know, you just put a penny in the meter then. Anything else?
Can you tell me a bit about the air raids?
Yeah, well, as I say, I wasn't actually in the Blitz. That's why I became evacuee. But I wasn't here when it all got bombed, when all the docks and that here got bombed. But when I came home, and when they'd stopped the bombing then, and then it became the doodle bugs, you know, they were the planes without a pilot. Marvellous things, I suppose, really.
You know, when you went to Cornwall, did you miss your mum?
Oh, yeah, I did. I remember writing home saying, can I come home? Oh, I want to come home. And that. But they thought I should be evacuated to have my chance in life. That's how some families felt you should all keep together if you got bombed, you know. Others thought, my brothers had, I mean, I had married brothers and married sisters, and they thought I should have my chance in life. So they all sat round the table and agreed I should be evacuated. Went with gas masks, you know, and I can always remember when I went to Cornwall, we had to get on a bus to take us to the main station. I can't remember what station it was. Probably Waterloo then, one of the big stations, that went all the way to Cornwall, and it was a terrific long train ride that was. You know, you still find it is, really. But, and I remember we was all sitting, all the kids on the bus, we'll meet again, and all our mums was all crying, you know. Was sad, yeah, but as I say, to me it was all a venture, yeah. It was a big adventure for me out of life, you know.
So,
no. And I still kept in touch with them, kept to the people writing to them and that, till suddenly you find your, I'm growing up, I've got married. I went and visited them at Cornwall after, and I took my son there, and they met my son, and then gradually you sort of break up. And I've gone back and looked at the flat place where I live since. My daughter's taken me down there because we go that way more for holidays now. And she took me once, but it was a bit sad for me to stay there. I didn't like going. They weren't living in that house. They'd passed away, they had. But I didn't want to go knock on the door. Probably might have been someone's daughter who I'd played with, you know. But I couldn't do it. I just sat in the car looking at the door. And one thing I did know is that they'd had electric light put outside their door then. That's how it had improved there, you know. But I loved it working on the farm, picking potatoes, yeah.
Did you ever cry? Did you hear, when you were in Cornwall, did you hear if one of your friends back in London got killed in the Blitz? Or?
I didn't hear of any getting killed in the Blitz. I got worried because I didn't realise the distance between places so much then. And I heard on the, because I didn't have televisions or anything like that, just a little radio. And I heard that the Elephant and Castle had been badly bombed and that. And I was crying then because, and I was trying to explain to the people where, how far, I didn't realise how far the Elephant and Castle was, that it didn't affect this part of Bermondsey, you know. When I did come home and see it, I couldn't believe it, you know, because they said a landmine had dropped in Abbey Street where we lived off of. You know, it was all devastating. And outside the block of flat, two blocks of flats where I lived, was great big piles of bricks, you know. They was all ever so high where they were saving the bricks from where the houses had fallen down, and they'd rummage around and get the best of them and that, and they would rebuild again with them. Too big it. Oh, they were like mountains to me when I come home, with bricks, you know. Yeah. But as I say, you never got. I used to go work, and then we'd meet the girls who you worked with of an evening, and we'd go in the Bermondsey bars in Grange Road, or we'd come down Rotherhithe and go dancing and that, you know. I didn't lose anything. I don't feel as though I lost anything by it. As regards to my youth, like from say 14 to 18. And I was 18 in the June, and I was thinking, well, I'll be called up. As war was, peace was declared in May. So it was just a month that I thought, I'm gonna get called up in June. I've got to go in one of the forces. I would have got in the land army on the farm, back on the farm, yeah. We got to, when I went to Cornwall, we got, you know, you start copying people where they speak, and they couldn't understand. And when the man came to pick me up from the school, he had a car, which was wonderful, you know, the man to have this car. And he came to pick me up, and when he started speaking to me and he asked me my name, I couldn't understand a word he said. He had such a, to me, such a brogue. And I thought, oh, I don't know where I'm at. I'm in foreign country. I didn't realise, you know, 12, where I was. I'm in a foreign country. I couldn't understand him. All he was trying to say was, what is your name? What's your name? Everyone called me Reenie, but from when I went to Cornwall, was the first place that I was ever called Irene. Yeah.
When you heard that your dad died...
I came home, yeah. My brother came home down there and got me and brought me home. And it, coming along in the home in the train, we had to pull out. It took us over 12 hours to get home, I remember, because the train had to stop because they were bombing the lines, and that we just had to sit where we were. And my dad, I got home in time to see my dad before he died. And when that happened, my brother who came to get me went in the Marines, in the Army, yeah. But having a big family, I suppose, and I was there, they used to all have big parties and that, you know, if one of them was called up to go in the forces and that, they'd have a big party. I missed all that a lot, you know, with the parties we used to have. Because people used to make the most of their lives, you know, and didn't let it get it down. We used to have lots of parties. When I came home and I went to work, I used to be going to all parties. You know, enjoyed myself, you know.
Is any of your brothers and sisters still alive?
Are they still alive?
Yeah, some of them.
No, I'm the last. I was the fourth, as I say. My mum had lost some of them before I was born, but then I'm the last one now. My sister died 2 years ago in December. She was 89, and she was in a wheelchair, and that she suffered a lot. But now I'm the last one left out of the 14 now. And my husband was the 13th in his family. So we both come from big families, and we were both the babies of them.
How scared was you when the rocket bombs were coming?
The rockets, you didn't know when they were coming because... I remember when we were going to work one morning, me and my friend, and you would get just a big red flash, and you knew that was going to be near. And we ran in some flats at Dockhead and just got down it like in the bottom ground floor staircase, because they didn't know when they were cast. I don't know, I'm only saying this. It probably was that rockets were so much faster that they just whizzed into, you know, London. They, to me, was the most frightening thing. Because we still went to the pictures when I came home and I was at work. We still went to the pictures, and I remember the pictures at the Elephant and Castle. You used to queue up under the arches that run along with them. And I can remember an old man, chap, coming round singing, and we used to shine our torches on him so that we could see him, and he used to sing the, I can remember it now, I'm going to lock my heart and throw away the key. That was a song that was at the time famous. And he threw the key one night, and it flew out of his hand, and we all had to show our torches to find his key for him under the arches. You know, it was, you had, like, but if the siren was sounded while you were seeing the pictures, it came up, and it was up your choice whether you wanted to still stay there and watch the film or whether you wanted to come out and get under the shelter in the arches or that.
Did that ever happen to you when you were in the pictures? Did it that come up?
Yeah. Sometimes I used to stay, and my friend, she was a bit nervous, and I remember seeing one film I wanted to see, I think it was called Citizen Kane, and Orson Welles, and I thought, oh, I'm going to stay. I don't want to go. I've paid my money to come in. But she wanted to go, and we had to come out. And when we, as we walked out, so the all clear sounded. But we had to come out. We've lost our money, you know.
How much did you pay for the picture?
I think then it was one shilling and 9 pence in the old money. I don't know what that'd be now. But used to pay one, and then they'd let so many in, and you'd stand at the back if there wasn't no seats till someone got up and seen up to what they wanted to see, and they'd go out, and then you'd get shown in. Because inside the picture palace was sort of like walking about in the blackout, you know. I remember I bought my first bike during the war, I see it at Deptford, funny enough, and a little bicycle shop, and it had chrome handles, but because you didn't get them then, they were all black, painted black, and wheels black. The wheels were black, but I'd seen this bike with the chrome handles, and I wanted a bike, because some of the girls where I worked used to go out on a Sunday on their bikes, and I wanted this one, and I went home, and my mum was frightened to let me on the roads with a bike. She said, no, I ain't going to lend you the money. But she did eventually, and I went and got this. When I come past it, you know, if you come up, is it New Church Road? And you turn round on it, if you're on the bus, there's a little row of houses, and there's, I think there's a minicab. That was in the shop, little shop there that I bought that bike. Forget how much it was now, but I bought it. And I used to go. We used to go out cycling of a Sunday, you know. Yeah.
Did you go to church on Sunday morning?
No. While I was evacuated to Cornwall, I used to have to go, because in the country they have what they call church and chapel, and the lady who had come from Plymouth, Salt Ash, she was church, which was like our Church of England, and the man was chapel. So I used to have to go church in the morning, Sunday school in the afternoon, and chapel of a night. So of a Sunday, while I was evacuated in Cornwall, I went 3 times a day on a Sunday, yeah.
Did you like church? Or?
Yeah, I've always loved singing hymns and that, you know, I love that, yeah.
Was there ever a siren sounding while you were in
church? No, I never heard it while I was in Cornwall. Never heard the siren go in Cornwall, no. It was peaceful country, and, you know, and used to play. The boys was on a big farm opposite, and you see them change themselves as they went there, went a bit scruffy and that, you know, rough, and then all of a sudden you'd see them getting all brown and on the farm. That much of that to work. I had to work in the shop because the man I lived with, he had to take people's rations and shopping out in a van and drive up to other little villages, and they was registered in their ration books. So I used to have a work of a night, and we used to pack Mrs. Jones's rations in there and Mrs. Sutherland in there. And no, I did work hard while I was there. But as I say, I was very fortunate. I had a good living, you know, I was looked after. First time in my life I ever tasted mushrooms when I was evacuated, because they used to just go out and someone who they knew on the farm would pick a fresh mushroom. I didn't know what a mushroom was before then.
No Russian. Did you find it?
Did I ever go angry or that?
Yeah.
No, I never did. No. You're young. You don't care. I often wonder. You wonder when you get older and you think about it, how your mother's managed to put a nice dinner on the table every day for you, because you never, when you was at school, you never had school meals or that. Then you all had to go home and come back. You do done the journey 4 times a day, you know. The first time when I went to Brighton, I was evacuated from Tadbridge School we used to call it Fair Street, but it, because it was invented, but it was Tadbridge School when we went to Brighton. Then during when I came back, I went on to, that was just before the war, and then, as I say, I was there at Brighton when it was declared. Then I come home and I don't know how I come to go to Riverside now, but I was evacuated to Cornwall from where they have St Michael's School is now. It was called Riverside East Lane School, and I went to Cornwall from that school.
When you was in Cornwall, did you ever go to school?
Oh, yeah. We had to share the school with the country children. They had their own little part. I mean, it must have been hard for them for us to all be plonked on them, you know. But we had our own teachers and they had their own teachers. The teachers who took us from London, and they had their own teachers, yeah.
Did you ever talk to the country people?
Yeah, the country children.
Yeah.
Yeah, we used to play with them. You got to know them well, yeah. Yeah, made friends with the girls and that, you know. No, we got on very well with them there. With in Brighton, you didn't make, because you was with your own school the time in Brighton. I was there 5 weeks, but it was your own mates who was billeted next door because they just took you all along the streets and billeted you, you know. But so you was with your own lot. But in Cornwall, you did mingle. Yeah, you did. Because you started talking like them, speaking like them, you know. They used to say, with enough raining, like they say, she's pouring a rain, and I used to talk like that when I come home. What's that all about? My brothers used to tease me, you know.
Did you know when you were talking like Cornwall people, and did your mum ever thought what happened to
Yes. Yeah, that's that. I mean, brothers and sisters used to laugh at me. What's she talking about, you know? She's got the old Cornish dialect. But you soon get over it when you go to work. You lose it quickly. Yeah.
Could you tell me about how your area changed, like, during the Blitz, how it changed to what it was before the war actually happened?
Yeah, I mean, I used to live, I've got a photo of my dad going, before the war, I'm going right back, they used to go out on a day's out in front of the corner pub, and it was like right on Abbey Street. Well, now that's where Looping Point, do you know Looping Point? Big tall block, there's one near St James's Church, Casby House, and there's Looping Point. That was where they were all low little row of shops, and the pub where I've got a photo of my dad going, what they used to call them charabangs, not coaches, charabangs, and it would be open top, and I've got a photo of my dad leaning on the top, going, all the men with their caps on, all the dockers, you know. And it changed vastly, because Jamaica Road, what you've got Jamaica Road now, wasn't Jamaica Road. I don't know if you know, it was an old Jamaica Road, there's a little road along. That was the main road where the trams used to run down. Yeah. And you used to get a 70 to London Bridge on a tram, a penny, and a penny to the Elephant and Castle to go to the pictures. 68 used to turn around at Tadbridge and go to the Elephant, and the 70 used to go straight on and stop at London Bridge. Yeah, I remember saying I bought a bike, and this Sunday me and my friends going to Greenwich, and I think it's Black Horse Bridge up near Deptford, where you came from. There was a pub called Old Black Horse, called the Black Horse, and I was going alone. My friend was in front of me, and my wheel went down the tram lines, and it threw me right over the handlebars. Yeah, with the old tram lines, and it was on a Sunday dinner time. They all come out of the pub and they all help me, and I can see the men all straightening me wheel for me and me bike. And I had to ride fast to catch me mate up. She's still riding along, didn't know where I was beyond. I went down the tram lines.
What was a tram?
What was a tram?
Yeah.
It was all like, imagine a bus, but a bit narrow, but longer. And it used to go on electric rails that was in the middle of the road. Yeah, and there was this one that was a bit open, and I'm looking at her and gone right down the wide one.
Did you catch her up?
Yeah. And I'm saying, Kit, look, wait for me, I've been down the tram lines. That was just where you come from, Deptford, yeah. Is that it? No. Do you want some more?
I just had a couple of questions.
Yes.
When you were saying about the doodle bugs,
mm-hmm.
did they fall every night or they you didn't?
Oh, they were coming over during the day, I know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because they was pilotless, weren't they? And they come out, and then all of a sudden you hear this humming, and then stop. And I says, me and Bob, we lived in that sort of block like that, and we're standing on the landing, and we could see all the ACAC fire going on to them, and we thought they'd call them, but it just stopped, and then wherever it stopped, it would come down and crash. Marvellous, really, when you think of it, Hitler had all them things, the rockets and the pilotless planes.
So did that mean that you had to go down to the ground floor and shelter every night regardless?
Oh, you would do that in case anything came over, you know. Oh, yeah, you would do that. But then when you got a lull, you went back into your... Every night you say, oh, I'm going to go and have a nice sleep tonight, you know.
But the sirens were going every night.
No, they didn't go every night. They don't even if there was a raid. They would see catch the planes coming, and they would go over. But, like, I don't think they could warn you. I don't recall the warnings going off before a rocket. You just used to get a sort of big flash, and you knew. And they were very, very powerful, I think, more so than the poet doodlebugs, yeah.
So when your building was hit, when you got hit?
It was the little block of houses facing that got hit. And it was, like I say, my sister's worked in a tin factory. There was one called the Metal Box in Riley Street. I think it still exists, or it's made into units now. And a lot of the people had been coming out. They slept there all night in the Metal Box shelter and come out and gone in these little houses making tea to all go work. Quite a few got, you know, neighbourly people got killed in Riley Road then, yeah. And because the street doors was facing the back gardens and it fell in and killed the people in them houses. And it just blew all our windows and everything out and the doors. And me and my mum say, so it was like this, and I was laying near the door, closed the door and laying on the floor. We'd take our own bedding down there. And there was a couple of other neighbours who came in there with us. And we'd all be along that wall laying on the floor. And the doors just come in and the wind just come in, you know. Yeah, it was wasn't a very nice experience, though. But I suppose you're not a bit dizzy at the time, because the next thing my uncle had come from Druid Street and he's come running round, and I could hear him calling my mum's name out, Liz, where are you? And he got us out, and they were lifting the doors off of us. And as I say, we must have been smothered in, you know, when you think of it, you take no notice, do you? And I can see him holding my mum against the wall and getting all the soot out of her mouth, and that we must have had it all down our throats, yeah.
How did people cope with that? I mean, you must have been terribly shocked.
Yeah, I went down, as I say, to this tin shop where my sisters worked, and my sister was very bit medical, like she thought she knew a lot about medical injuries and all that she used to try. And she was in with the nurse there, and the nurse let us go in her and wash herself up and tie herself. But you still had to go to work the next day. Wouldn't dare lose a day's work. No, I had to go up along the wharf where I worked and in the afternoon and tell them that we'd been bombed out. And I was saying, is it all right if I go on the floor and speak to my friend? Funny enough, we've both met up going to Time and Talents now. And I said, only I had her shoes. I borrowed a pair of shoes off her and I had to go upstairs with the soldier walking up and down, guarding all your flats, because they was all open to anybody, wasn't it? I mean, they'd have a field day today, wouldn't they? I mean, people wasn't so fond of going in other people's houses like they are today.
I was going to ask that about the soldier as well. Was there a looting problem with some people?
Oh, yeah. It did go on, yeah.
What was your work?
I'll tell you what else we used to do. We used to do dried milk powder, and we used to have to put them. That you had a big sort of, say like the size of that settee come out either side, and the young lads used to tip big barrels of milk powder in it, and you would stand there. You'd have three girls on it. And you'd have to scoop the milk powder in a paper bag and put it in a box there, and another girl would, she would weigh it, and then it sort of went down the line of that, to either side of that table. She would weigh it, another lady would put the tin on, another lady would put a bit of sellotape around it. And that's how you got a lot of milk, because it had been dried. Same thing happened to egg powder. Eggs were dried to preserve it. And for a few months you used to go and with all lovely long white eyelashes where all the powder got on them. Next time you'd go and they'd all be yellow. Yeah. And we used to wear the white turbans, and we made it fashionable, and then we'd wear a blue one underneath, and so we had a blue bit of blue bit coming over the top. We'd make it a bit of fashion with sort of square, if you had your arm in a cloth sling then. Well, they would be our turbans, and we'd buy a dark blue one and make a fashion of it, yeah. You did all different things. And then after the war, I still worked there, and they used to have what was called bundles for Britain that were supposed to come over earlier to help the all from America that used to come over to us. But instead of them being bundles for Britain, we used to have to unpack them, sort them out, repack them in big sacks, and we had a big machine that you put all wire around it and tie it all up. And they went out to Germany, and they were really bundles. That went on for quite a long while, that did, yeah.
That was after the war?
That was after, yeah. That was called, we used to have to call that UNRWA, it came under the United Nations or something. The word was UNRWA. That we were diverting the bundles for Britain to Germany then, that we'd bombed, you know. So, yeah. We'd feel down in the pockets to see. They would be all combs and toothbrushes, what you couldn't get still, well, just after the war, you know. The Americans was very good like that, yeah.
One more question was just about your dancing.
Well, during the war,
yeah.
Used to be in the bar, more like the swimming bars. I'm trying to think where we went, because the Rotherhithe baths along here in the main road got bombed. I remember there used to be a little group of fellas who's grown up with you in your block of flats, and in the Bermondsey bars, what was in just opposite Spa Road, we used to go dancing there. But then the war was sort of beginning to ease up. It was all going on more in Japan and all that. We'd invaded Germany. We were winning the war. And that used to be New Cross Palais. We used to go up there. We still got out and about. The young ones did, you know, which must have been, I suppose, a terrible worry for your mothers while you was out. And they know the siren's gone, you know.
They didn't stop you?
No. That was our enjoyment, you know. Because when we worked along that, we were all the young girls, and of course it was first time that really wives and that went to work, didn't they? You know, they did when they got married before the war. They didn't go to work no more, sort of thing. And then we was all young girls and that, and we and we all enjoyed ourselves. But we used to, but we was piecework, and so we used to work hard to earn the money. So then you sort of, as I say, played hard a bit. You'd take a chance and go out, and you'd try and buy ration ticket coupons. So you'd buy them off the, a lot of the young fellas who wanted a fag on that would sell their ration, their clothes books or their sweet coupons to us. You know, we'd buy them off of them. Because you had to have all clothes was rationed and everything, you know.
Any of the bombs were near. Any of the bombs were near you were.
Yeah, well that, well, it wasn't a bomb that dropped right near us when we were down in the bottom of the flat. It was a doodle bug, a plane, and it came right down, and that was the what, that was the nearest one that, you know, when I say my uncle had to run round and get us out. But I say we went to work the next day. Yeah, still had to go to work. Couldn't stop at home.
Was there one day that you didn't go to work?
Well, as I say, the next, very next day, as I came out from this, where my sisters were sheltering in this tin factory, Fevers as it was called in Tabridge Road, we come home, and then I had to go to my firm and tell them that I'd got bombed out, but then I had to go 8 o'clock the next morning and go to work again. Just let them know, because you sort of worked in teams, and if one of you wasn't there and you'd worked it up to be a good team, you would lose your place. Someone else would take your place. So you wanted to get back and get your place, you know. Because you did work hard. It was hard work. But, that, you know, you accepted it. You've always nothing else you could do. You had to accept it, didn't you, you know. And we used to, a few of us used to volunteer to go over St Olive's Hospital, what was across the road here, and help to clean the ward up. And that, you know, as you got older, you was allowed to go and do a bit of volunteer work there. There was always something going on for you to do, you know. If you was, you'd venture out, and most of your family all used to use the local pub, all get in there and have a drink, you know. So is that it?
Got any more questions?
Thank you.